Okay, with our special guest, Dr. Judy Wood, we're talking about her work, Where Did the Towers Go? A full hour of phone calls right around the corner on Coast to Coast AM. Judy, tell us about the rolled up carpet effect. What is that?
It's a term I gave for the columns that were curled around the wrong axis. We see, you know, if in squashing pop cans, the sidewalls of the can buckle, they go in and out zigzaggy.
Mm-hmm.
When the towers went away, if they had collapsed, you would expect to see buckled over columns. They would fold over around the horizontal axis. But that is not what we see in the rubble of what's left. I call these outer columns the prefab sections of three columns wide by three stories tall, wheat checks, because they kind of look like that. And one of the photographers called them that. And it's a good name, just these units. So you see these wheat checks on the ground, and they're rolled up, like looks like a rolled-up carpet. These three columns are rolled around each other. The spandrel plates that were every floor are curled around. So if they're, you know, had been crushed, you wouldn't get them curling around the vertical axis. They would be bending over.
I tell you, the picture on the back of your book is truly remarkable. And I you can see exactly what you're talking about. The post office, there's the Verizon building. Both of them look simply unscathed, don't they?
The Verizon building had a hole in the front. Just, you know, one stab of a wheat checks went in there. But the post office, not even a scratch on its side. And also what I noticed that these, I call them stab wounds, you know, or a wheat check stabbed into a building, that's only in a couple of places, and it's never above, like, the 18th floor. These buildings are 110 stories tall, yet there's no wheat checks laying on the roofs of any buildings, which
that's
is peculiar.
Amazing.
I also went through some calculations, rough calculations, about how much of the top building, if it turned to dust, and left, you know, like bottom 16 stories or so, that would create the same seismic signal as what was recorded.
Well now, answer this for me. If this high beam energy weapon was used, is it that accurate where they can literally pinpoint a building and not hit another one behind it?
If it's interference. It only happens where you have the interference of the energy fields. Doing, you know, a lot of work in optics and in photographic emulsion, think of the photographic emulsion on a piece of paper. The image you take of somebody doesn't burn their picture on the piece of paper. What it does is trigger a chemical reaction in that photographic emulsion, and it's controlled by the light. The photographic emulsion is uniform over the surface of the paper, but where the light hits it controls where the chemical reaction takes place. You develop it, and that's where on the negative, that's where the material stays. The silver stays behind, and the other part washes away where it wasn't exposed. But think of it that way, that the static field is like the photographic emulsion. And the light is the equivalent to the radio frequency signal.
All right, let's go to the phones. Abraham is in Peoria, Illinois. Hi, Abraham.
Hey there. I just wanted to say thank you to you and to Dr. Wood. First of all, you, Mr. Newry, for having her on the air, because also thank you to Dr. Wood for the work she's done. That's why I'm calling in, is because just browsing through all the information on her website and now in her book, it's just so important that people look into this for themselves, because she has hit the nail on the head, in my opinion. And it's just so amazing that she even took it to court, and at the level it reached in court, you know, all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court in October of 2009. It's just really, really important information, because like you guys have been discussing, I really feel like the human race is so much better than this, and that this technology needs to be put to good use, saving people's lives and fixing the world and making it a better place and not weaponized and used against innocent people that were just showing up to work on one day. And so thank you very much to both of you for bringing awareness to this important topic and all the evidence that shows what happened on that day. So thank you.
Well, Judy, you've done the lion's share of all this work. How long did it take you?
Well, I've been, you can say 30 years if you looked at my professional life, but
sure.
Since 9/11. And figuring out, how, it's also been a learning curve with how to not fall into the pitfalls of, you know, the misdirections.
Where do you get your book? Amazon's got it?
Also on my website, wheredidthetowersgo.com.
I'm curious to see how mainstream media has reacted to you and this book. If anything, what have they done?
Well, you're the closest thing. and I congratulate you for having the courage to discuss this.
Well, I think it's important. I think it's important for people to hear other experts who have other views so they can just sit back and make up their own minds about all these different things. And I just think we do not do justice if we don't look at these other views. I may not agree with you, Judy. I may agree with you. But the point is that people have an opportunity and they should have the opportunity to hear you. And that's what I do. I wish the other media people would do that. They don't have to agree with you. And see, that's one of the mistakes. A lot of people think because we have a guest on, that means that's what we believe. No. We have a guest on because we want you to have the ability to hear another side or another angle. And I think that's so important. So important.
But also, a lot of people are in our culture now are conditioned to start with the answer and then look for the evidence that supports the answer. And they're in a hurry to get to the answer. And they take a multiple choice test. But if the answer isn't one of those choices, you're fixing to mess up. You're going to get a wrong answer. And it's unusual to find someone who starts with the evidence and moves forward from there and sees where the evidence takes them. So if the answer is started out with, and if the evidence doesn't fit the answer, it makes a lot of people uncomfortable.
See, the buildings, when they fell apart to me, just looking at the picture on the cover, it doesn't look like a controlled demolition or a pancake effect. It looks more like a total pulverization, and it just seems like it's like a waterfall effect where it's just dust is just accumulating and piling over on each other.
My name for that picture is Bubbler, the Bubbler. The Midwest, the drinking fountains are called Bubblers.
It looks like it could be lava coming out of a volcano. You know what?
Yeah, it's just frothing up, and it's going upward and outward.
So the big cloud, not smoke, it's dust?
The majority of it, yes.
Yeah.
And it was so fine that it went up as well. It continued breaking down. That's another important issue is these wheat checks, you can see them flying through the air and dissolving like ice cream with the dust trailing out behind them, and they don't hit the ground.
And again, what do you mean by wheat checks?
The wheat checks, prefab units of the outer sides of the building.
Of the shell of the building. All right.
Yes.
Where the windows are put in.
Right. Mm-hmm. The three columns, three stories tall, and there's these three spandrel belts across, and they're the prefab units they use to build the towers. And you see these things flying out and dust trailing behind them. And then the intersection where they're heading towards right afterwards is empty.
So it's got
dust and paper.
How would you feel if someone read your book and said, Judy, you're nuts? I mean, would that bother you?
I'm used to it.
Are you?
But no one can find anything, they can't fault any aspect of the book.
Well, you've got three major degrees leading up to a PhD. You've got to know something about stress analysis and structural engineering.
Also, a lot of my work is in experimental mechanics. Observing phenomena. And these wheat checks flying through the air, turning into dust, then you notice that the dust has landed. You see a clear blue sky in the background, which means that had to be coarse dust that landed.
How did you get interested in the field? Because, you know, most, you know, mechanical engineers are guys. How did you get involved in this?
I always just made the decisions when I got to every fork in the road. Just that was what I liked to do. And figuring out how things work or why things are the way they are and how you know, materials act.
Did you have Legos and an Erector set when you were a
yeah.
kid? I knew it.
The toys that build engineers.
That's funny. Okay, let's go to Long Island, New York. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, folks. Some interesting things I'm hearing tonight.
Yes.
Question and observation. You mentioned the bathtub.
Mm-hmm.
Now, going into that bathtub, under every building in the bathtub, which is everything that fell, I think, are subway lines, the path lines to New Jersey, bringing in a tremendous amount of air to feed this whole system, all right? And each one of those buildings is connected in the bathtub with all this air. And I've never, ever heard anybody talk about what happened to the PATH trains that were in New Jersey, what happened to the subway trains that were uptown a bit. You understand what I'm saying? With the amount of heat, the amount of fire, and almost, to me, this creates like kilns, all right, that are being fed oxygen from the bottom. And nobody's ever talked about this and those effects. And to me, you talk about tornadoes. I grew up in the Midwest, so I know a little bit about tornadoes.
Oh, yeah, you know about tornadoes.
And, you know, and tornadoes do crazy things. And my thought right now is, what happened if there was enough air coming in to create a tornado in each one of these buildings in some way or another, all right? Plus the fact that, you know, you had a couple hundred thousand pounds of diesel fuel in each tower from the planes. And you mentioned Oklahoma City, and the Oklahoma City bomb, from what I understood, was like nitrogen fertilizer mixed with diesel fuel, all right? So all these things could have created all kinds of fumes and all kinds of, you know, unknown situations. And then the next question I have, did anybody ever test the steel to see if it was up to standard? Because to me, cast iron pulverizing in heat would, you know, pulverize where, you know, regular steel may not.
All right. Go ahead. First of all, did anybody test the steel?
It was tested beforehand, and it was up to snuff. That Underwriters Lab had tested it in the late 60s, early 70s when they built the towers. But if the steel was too weak or if it was too hot, you get bowing. I've got this pop quiz, and I actually gave it to my class once. We just had covered what the section on what temperature does to steel. And so I said, you want to heat up a pot of water over your campfire. So you get a bunch of old coat hangers, wad them up to make a grill, set your pot of water on top of that grill, and start the fire. What's going to happen? Is the pot going to just sit there? Nothing will happen? Or as the fire heats up, what's going to happen with those thin metal coat hangers? Are they going to suddenly shatter into dust and the pot slammed to the ground? Or as they heat up, are they going to get less strong and less strong until they'll sag more and more and the pot will just kind of ease on down to the ground?
Well, that's a good point. Next up, let's go to Jack in Ohio. Hi, Jack. Go ahead.
Yes, I guess I see things in a more broader view. I've always gone with the truth and physical facts, whatever the case, physical facts of any story or evidence, they simply don't lie. The physical facts, chemistry, mathematics, science, physics, all of which is possible and all of which the doctors already mentioned, they point the way. And however anybody comes down on it, whether they think it was an inside job or whether they think it was Al-Qaeda, these people were quoted as saying they wanted to make this country a shadow of what it once was. And so far they're succeeding. And you look at all that has been lost, all the wars, and now bin Laden so sudden and couldn't find him for 10 years, and the bodies in the ocean, reelect me. And you can't Google what are Al-Qaeda's demands. You can't Google how large is Al-Qaeda. But it's been my contention that Al-Qaeda was never the big band that it was. It was a group of rebels, you know, and they become mythical. And now that they've been decapitated, their leader's been lopped off, it's now going to be an excuse for more heightened sense of, already a heightened sense of security, and more and more.
Sure.
I always saw back in 95, I always thought that Oklahoma City, and I did think that that bridge a few years ago was suspicious, but I remember thinking to myself that that just seemed suspicious, but then plausible that there was homegrown terrorism, and it's plausible yet today. But like, yes, I said, they'll build the lie that a mythical Al-Qaeda is larger. But what I'm bringing this back full circle is I could clearly see after 9/11 that Oklahoma City was a run-up. But please, I hope all the listeners will consider that physical facts simply do not lie. Whether we, as a good doctor points out, that it is Tesla, cold fusion or that related energy, which is all possible. And it's just the physical facts. And, you know, when an officer shows up on a crime scene, what does the facts say? And you go from there. It doesn't matter what the person in questioning is telling you. It's what the physical facts say. And the physical facts, the chemistry, the math, the science, it doesn't add up to what they have told us. No matter how you come down onto it, whether it was an inside job or a government plot or they knew or they didn't know, it doesn't add up. And it adds up to what the good doctor's saying and the Corps of Engineers, Justice for Truth, are saying.
All right, good observation, Jack. And we're going to be back with final phone calls in just a moment with our special guest tonight, Dr. Judy Wood, her book, Where Did the Towers Go? I'm George Norrie. I'll be back in a sec. I'll tell you what to expect on our next Coast to Coast show before we take your final calls. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, Split Show, John Hogue joins us, Patrick Caron. We're going to be talking about world prophecy, so get ready for that. And when we come back with Dr. Judy Wood, we'll take final phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. Judy, as you look back at all the work you've done into this, is there anything that you would do differently or change?
I can't think of anything offhand.
Okay, so you're pretty happy with it, and it's very elaborate. Where did you get all the photos? Where were you able to get them?
In the public domain. And some I took myself. Some I went to the site and visited it several different times with various people, good friends Andrew Johnson and Russell Gerst, and we had taken pictures of it. But most of them are from the internet, and all the pictures have their sources listed that are in the book.
If this happened the way you say it did, what do you think the message is behind this?
It's up to us as to how we want to perceive it. Do we want to see, you know, this type of technology in the hands of where it's going, or do we want to do something different with it? And it's our choice.
Okay, back to the phones. Let's go to Ed in Placenia, California, west of the Rockies. Hey, Ed, thanks for calling.
Well, thank you. it's very admirable, the work that Dr. Is doing. I myself got a master's degree in material science and also worked in fracture mechanics. And so I'm familiar with a lot of the things she's talking about, but I can't get over one thing. It's
what is it?
Material falling apart, and that is the atomic bond. And what I want to talk about, the atomic bond, is most people think when you heat something up that the atoms vibrate faster. But the main thing is the amplitude increases. What increases the frequency of the atomic vibrations? That's where we have an interaction of some type of energy, this free energy source you're talking about. It's the frequency of vibrational frequency between the atoms going. Would you have anything to say about that?
No, that's you're right on.
it's what you're basically saying, Judy, isn't it?
Yes, yes, very much so. And it's changing the structure of matter. And it could even cause transmutation. There's evidence of that from the WTC site as well as from John Hutchison's work.
Any idea how long you would have to bombard a building with this before it would collapse or pulverize?
I think it matters what type of energy for how long. And for the control mechanism, like one of the towers was 1 hour. Another tower was 5 hours. Or mm-hmm. more than that, six plus hours. So it's, you know, different amounts. It isn't just that it took it for as long as it could and then came apart. It's that there's different stages that can be used. I think you have slow-speed film and you have fast-speed film.
What did they do? Aim at one first and then move over to the next one, then the next one?
Or all of them at the same time. But just, you know, a higher intensity of something at one instead of the other ones.
Well, see, what I don't understand is if you're using this kind of technology, this directed technology, how come you didn't knock down, let's say, the post office behind them in the same burst?
It's what happens with it. Okay, think of a photographic negative, this analogy, that light only goes through where the openings are.
Right.
It's sort of a template. If you have a kind of a template over this region, it can help control exactly where the interference is going to take place. There are other ways of controlling it, but that's a mental model of it. There's toasted cars as far away as FDR Drive or underneath FDR Drive.
Mm-hmm.
Like that one where it looks like the back end is, you know, showroom pristine.
Yes.
The other side of it has this circular spot on it that's still kind of pristine looking where it's toasted around it, an abrupt margin where, you know, 1 nanometer to the left is totally toast, 1 nanometer to the right is in pristine condition. Fire does not do that, but an interference of energy would.
All right, let's go to Catherine in Manhattan. Hi, Catherine. Thanks for holding.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And, Judy, thank you for the wonderful work. I can't wait to read your book. It sounds fantastic.
Thank you.
I wanted to throw this into the mix. In the mid to late 90s, I remember reading more than one article in, I don't know if it was in the Times or in a mainstream media. They were discussing that the World Trade Center buildings were not profitable. They were, you know, built before the computers were, you know, so common, and the way the elevators were split, you know, they could not get the money that, you know, similar, you know, that they wanted to, and that retrofitting the buildings would have been, you know, cost prohibitive. And they had, and the article talked about, you know, taking them down, but they said that could not be done because, you know, the emotional attachment people had to those buildings and, you know, everything. And, you know, that always stuck in the back of my head, you know. you know, I think this is going to wind up being like the Kennedy assassination, where there was not just one motivation. You know, people are so, you know, geared towards, you know, looking for one cause behind this and, you know, blaming the government or, you know, looking for one villain. We have to remember that in our government, there are a lot of people who are not loyal to the United States of America. We had a president who was a Rhodes Scholar. A lot of people don't know what that means, Rhodes Scholar. Cecil Rhodes set that up to propagate the goals of the British Empire. So that, you know, a lot of people think Rhodes Scholar, the guy must be bright. I think of something totally different when I hear that. And then getting back to your, you know, your field of you know, the building mechanics, something had to happen, microwave or something, because that pile was hot enough. They were melting the workers' boots on them till the end of November. There were fires underneath that. Whatever was going on was so hot, it was, you know, melting their boots well into the end of November. They finally declared the fires under the pile to be under control. So they're, you know, we're not getting the right story. So, you know, thank you for the work you're doing.
Okay,
thanks so much. Let me mention something about the story with the boots. Again, you know, people ask questions until they're given an answer. It doesn't matter if the answer makes sense. They just, you know, so much going on, people just take that and move on. And that's one of them that stayed for quite a while, is about the boots melting. And I like to point out that, you know, my oven, if it's melting on the outside, the turkey inside is well done. And there's these stories about the steel-toed boots melting, but no stories about feet being burned. And what I think is that the boots were deteriorating from something. And so the best thing that matched anyone's experience was that I guess they were melting from heat because they saw fumes coming up. But if you look at the actual temperature of things, you have paper that doesn't burn. You have water that doesn't turn into steam explosions. You had a broken water main that afternoon with firefighters walking around in knee-deep water. No steam explosions. And when water, you know, becomes steam, it expands in volume by 1,600 times, and you'd have horrendous problems there. But you didn't have that, and there was no evidence of high heat. It was cold, wet, damp basement. But there is this appearance of it, like, you know, things glowing, as well as fumes coming up, as well as other things continuing to disintegrate, continuing to break down. Like this dust I mentioned, that when it landed, it had to be coarse because you could see clear blue sky in the distance. And then pretty soon it starts rising up. Like, I call it fuzz balls around the feet. And then pretty soon it's rising up by itself. That fine of dust could not have landed in 15 minutes. In this photo I have, that had to be coarse dust that landed and continued breaking down to the point that it rose up and people were inhaling it. And the measurements, you know, even weeks later, were that the dust particles were on the size of the order of a DNA, that size. Just very, you know, there's no way a face mask could keep that from going. No way that anything could stop it. It just go right into the bloodstream, inhaled.
Well, it's an incredible story. Now, is this the same as a particle beam weapon, what you're talking about?
No. This is interference of energy fields.
This is probably even more significant, isn't it?
Right, and it doesn't necessarily come from a place. It's an interference where it matters just where the interference is occurring, not where the beams start from, right, where the energy fields originate from.
All right, let's go to Eureka, California. It's Heather's turn, first-time caller. Hi, Heather.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, and thank you, Dr. Woods, for your courage and the sacrifices you've made to bring this information out. Prior to hearing your very compelling arguments tonight, I've tended to believe that the evidence supported controlled demolition, and part of that was the presence of thermite in the walls in the World Trade Center buildings. And I'm wondering how that factors into your hypothesis. Do you think it was somehow important in the buildings coming down the way you suggest, or do you think perhaps these fiends had several plans for ways to bring these buildings down, and controlled energy is simply the way they went with in the end, or how do you explain thermite?
Well, thank you. Thanks for that question. There's a lot of talk of this thermite, but thermite hasn't been is a welding material. It hasn't been shown to cause buildings to turn into powder in midair. But thermite is made of rust and powdered aluminum, and the buildings were made out of steel, which if you break it into fine dust, it's going to be rusty, and aluminum cladding. So when the buildings come apart, they're made out of, you know, you would expect the dust from those buildings to be powdered aluminum and iron, and that's what we call thermite. So in a way, it's kind of a cover story to cover the idea that the buildings turned into powder. I mean, that's what this quote thermitic material is, but this does not cause a building to turn into powder in midair. And what we saw is a building that turns into powder.
Okay, great. Let's go to Karen, Brooklyn, New York. Hi, Karen.
Hi. Okay, I've lived in New York City since 1993. I was here that day, and I was in Brooklyn, but in a different part of Brooklyn than I am now. And I was close enough that there was, you know, the debris cloud, and there were pieces of charred paper floating through the air, and you know, it was horrendous. But I mean, there's things I agree with. That cloud was not smoke. That big cloud, that monster, was just complete dust and particulate matter. Absolutely. But the thing that I'm a little confused about is in terms of saying that the building turned into powder, because a previous caller brought it up. Actually, it was like pools of molten steel. Burning, it was down there for 3 weeks, a month. I mean, and the smell permeated the entire city. Depending on which way the wind blew, it went everywhere. I mean, I can still smell it. I can recall it. And it was just this chemical, plastic, you know, everything that was there, and it was burning down there. I mean, you'd cross the bridges, the East River bridges, Brooklyn Bridge, Manhattan, and you know, you could see right downtown. And you would see the fumes coming up.
Right. You would see fumes.
For weeks. What I'm confused is that you say that it turned to powder and that there was no damage. I mean, the Marriott, which was directly across the street from the towers, had extensive damage. And there were other buildings that were right around from chunks falling. I mean, while I can agree that a lot of it was completely obliterated, there was still a lot that was left. And in addition to the molten stuff that was melting down there, they for 2-3 weeks, there was a constant outflux of debris going out to Fresh Kills and on slow boats to China. But it was there. They just got rid of it really fast, which was just insane because it's a crime scene.
It was a crime scene. Yeah.
I mean, I never, ever, for one iota of a second, believed the story, ever. I mean, it never made sense from the very beginning, and I don't know what it was, but it certainly wasn't the planes coming in and the damage that the planes did and the subsequent fires that brought these things down. And then Building 7, 47-story building that came down at 5:25 that day, Silverstein going on the air saying, "I remember seeing it. I remember watching. Of course, we're watching TV all day long. I remember him coming on and saying, we decided to pull it."
Yeah, yeah.
And watching it was like...
And then denied it.
And then denied it. And then he said, we weren't talking about the building, pulling the building down. We were talking about pulling out the contingent of firemen because they determined that the fires were unfightable and, you know, it was too dangerous for them. It wasn't worth it. So we decided to pull the firefighters, and the building just came down on its own. I mean, you look at that footage. You look at it. I mean, come on, people. Come on, look at it. It's so obvious. And so I completely agree that there was something else. Something else brought those things down. Something else. But what, I have what, to say, there whatever, was a ton of debris. There was a ton. Those buildings did not disappear.
Well, you can't pulverize everything, but you're right, Karen. It was everywhere. We've got a minute to go, Dr. Judy Wood. I'd like you to do a very quick wrap-up. Where did the towers go?
That is the question of the day and year and decade. They turned to powder or turned to dust, and the dust was first coarse and broke down finer and finer. And the book, Where Did the Towers Go, is available at wheredidthetowersgo.com or on Amazon, either place. And in the book is evidence that needs to be explained. Evidence that can't be explained by any of the typical stories that we've heard so far. But it's empirical evidence that must come first before we come up with theories. And what I present is not a theory. It isn't speculation. It's the evidence that needs to be explained.
And no doubt about that. Judy, thank you for being on the program. Dr. Judy Wood, her book, Where Did the Towers Go? Pretty compelling, her theory on the evidence of directed energy technology. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudisor, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norris. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.